Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And I wanted to make this recording a little bit different today because there are things that need to be discussed, not just by myself as a history teacher and kind of history enthusiast. I never really think of myself as a historian particularly, but somebody who wants to bring the best of what I've read about to a wider audience. It's not really a podcast where I tell the listener things. It's a podcast where I'm asking for engagement from you guys on a matter which I think is very, very important. And it's the matter of hate speech online. Now, the podcast has grown to a size whereby we're getting something like 60,000 individual listens per month. Around the world, the new platform that I use shows me almost down to kind of micro detail where people are downloading from, and it's extraordinary. There are large numbers of people in America, Great Britain, Australia, Canada who listen, but all sorts of extraordinary and unexpected places. That just shows my kind of Anglocentric worldview, doesn't it? From Asia, Africa, the Middle East. We've had some listeners in North Korea, would you believe it? But, you know, keep that one quiet. And when you reach an audience of this size, it's not sufficient to simply put information out there and ideas out there and take no responsibility for them once they land. It's also not sufficient to simply view it as my podcast. It's not. It's yours. It's yours. Every time that you click on a recording, it becomes your podcast, because how you listen to what I am saying and how you interpret what I'm saying is unique to you, the listener, and to the next listener who might be, you know, a stone's throw from you or 100 miles from you or 1,000 miles from you. Their worldview, their based on what I'm saying and their own experiences of life and their own culturally distinct historical formation is going to be entirely different too. So every time, if 1,000 people listen to one podcast, it's 1,000 different podcasts. So it's not my podcast, it's yours. And that brings me to the key point here, what we do about hate speech that is emerging. I've discovered recently, when I put the podcast into YouTube format, and we're getting about 20,000 listens a month or views a month on YouTube, so it's growing, that there are people, particularly when it's topics such as Nazism or civil rights, who are putting hate speech comments. Now, the question about what to do about this isn't a simple one. There are, in fact, I think, two contending perspectives. If you look at what Karl Popper had to say in The Open Society and Its Enemies, he said that there is a free speech paradox at play, that if you allow absolute free speech to everybody, then you will embolden those that wish to destroy free speech, thus destroying free speech. By allowing Hitler or his admirers, carte blanche to say what they want. They will engineer a situation whereby they destroy everybody else's rights other than their own. Against that point of view is the more Chomskyan libertarian notion that free speech is for the ideas that you disagree with. There's no point in having free speech if it is simply a narrow band of ideas that you deem acceptable to you in the first place. So we must be offended by free speech. My way of thinking about this is as follows. And firstly, before I give you my way of thinking about this, the purpose of this podcast is to invite you guys, everybody, before we take any action on this at all, to have a platform. So I'm going to post something on the Explaining History Facebook page in a little while. And I'd like as many people to join in the conversation, because I'm not going to take action before, really, we have a kind of a consensus. Because as I've said, this is your podcast, this is a democratic community, and it's not my place to take action unilaterally. However, I will make my point here. Firstly, the Popper argument, I think, is valid, that free speech must have its limitations. It's a bit like the right to speech is a bit like the right to drive. We all have the right to a driving license, but we cannot drive in exactly how we want, mowing down pedestrians, because there would be anarchy. So there must be a kind of a system of essential rules to speech. And the rules must follow, you know, the empathic principle that I can do what I like as long as it does not harm another person. I think that's the first principle we need to adopt regarding the kind of the limitations of what we say. And it's the kind of behaviour that we would like to be able to aspire to in everyday life. The second view is that it is right and proper that we're all exposed to debate, that our ideas are debated. There are people who write and add comments on the YouTube channel which are extremely healthy, which I don't necessarily always agree with or think are entirely valid, and some that I do, and some that challenge what I have to say and force me to entertain different perspectives and to synthesise and come up with new positions and explanations for things. That's great. But the points that are being made by hate speech enthusiasts aren't really debates at all. You know, somebody writing Hitler was brilliant. Well, what conversation is there actually to be had there? The idea that, you know, if you think Hitler is great, it's not a historical argument. It's an ideological one, or perhaps you could make the case that it's a moral one, or one that kind of suggests a lack of any kind of personal morality. So it could be okay to make the case for deleting such comments because they offer nothing to the conversation, and the only thing that they're likely to do is cause harm. Harm by which I mean making people who want to watch a video or listen to a podcast and have a look at the comment threads below feel alienated and unwelcome. Jewish or Muslim or gay or lesbian or just non-Nazi, non-fascist people will feel that this is not a public forum that's welcome to them. And as we can see, there are so many spaces online where this kind of poisonous, hate-filled attitude is starting to bubble up, that it's entirely possible that if it goes unchecked in certain forums and in certain arenas, there will be fewer and fewer places for people who are offended and disgusted by fascist thinking to feel comfortable. Now, I'm aware that there's a whole range of thinking on the idea of safe spaces, particularly at universities, places where people won't be challenged by ideas that offend them. And much has been made of this. How prevalent this is, really, I don't know. And we do have to be careful that we don't limit the scope of debate and insulate people from realities they find uncomfortable, but which are there nonetheless. So it's okay for people to discuss Nazism. It's okay for people to have lively debate about Nazism. There are people who have revisionist views on Nazism who might say all sorts of outlandish, misguided things about the Holocaust or about the Second World War or about Hitler's various merits as a leader. And those are the people that I believe can be actively engaged in debate. But people who are simply there and their express wish is to encourage hatred, and they don't wish to engage in any kind of conversation. Debate with those people actually does more harm than good. Much like attention-seeking children, they gain a kind of acceptability, a kind of kudos, by engaging in confrontation, and their set ideology is to engage the social justice warriors of the world, which I think is an amazing title, by the way, and if anyone wants to call me that, I'm perfectly happy. It sounds like a kind of online Facebook Jedi type thing. To engage people like myself in angry debate. And the thing is that, you know, if you argue with an idiot, you'll always lose. The most serious point here about removing hate speech is that it's a necessary censorship. It is a necessary censorship because of the context in which it exists. At the moment, we see far-right movements making advances in America, in Great Britain. We see them making advances in Europe. But some of the more terrifying ones are actually in places such as the Philippines, India, and other parts of what we'd notionally call the Third World. There was an interesting report several years ago which suggested amongst Hindu nationalists in India that Mein Kampf had had a resurgence in popularity. So we are in very, very dangerous conditions worldwide, a scourge we thought we had pushed to history's margins, is trying to fight its way back onto centre stage. And so it's incumbent upon anyone and everyone, even an irrelevant little podcaster like me, who has a comparatively minuscule audience, to hold the line. And when other groups around and individuals around the world and online, with presences small, medium or large, are making efforts to create places where there is no hate speech, it cannot be acceptable for myself or for anybody else to undermine that. So that's my position. I believe that a censoring of hate speech is essential for the reasons I've set out. Now, I do not claim a monopoly on truth, and I do not claim a monopoly on rationale. And there are arguments, I'm sure, that can be put back to me against the position that I have. And I welcome the debate, because I don't want to make decisions without having heard from everybody. It's not my place to, and it is, as I said, your podcast. So I'm going to finish this strange little sermon here, but I'm going to invite everybody to come to the Explaining History Facebook page and join in the conversation, and we'll come to a consensus position about what to do. Thanks very much, and I'll speak to you all soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.